in finance reform, and running without a super PAC. But Cishan says it's more about getting voters thinking as they head to cast their ballots.
Occupying the primary is about getting our message out there, and whether or not we're voting in the primary is, you know, sort of a personal issue.
Occupy activists are at the polls today across the state, talking to voters. Later, they will host a celebration at their encampment in Veterans Park. Organizers say getting the media, the candidates, and the general population talking about money in politics is a victory in itself. Alice Holstein, FSRN, Manchester.
Spectrum Today was produced by Askia Muhammad. Engineering by David Kelly. I'm Askia Muhammad. The Raucous Caucus starts now. Thank you for listening.
WPFW, Washington.
Live from Ben's Next Door, 12th and U Streets Northwest, it's the Raucous Caucus with Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, and Terry D. Kester. It's seriously funny, and it begins right now.
Welcome to Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street. I am Mark Levine with
Garland Nixon
and
Terry D. Kester, the doctor of democracy.
And we are the Raucous Caucus, and we are live at the back of Ben's Next Door. There's still time to make the show. Just drive down to 1211 U Street, right next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, and park the car. Go in the back behind the curtain.
And if you're listening from New Hampshire, don't bother to vote. It's not real anyway. It's all a game. Just forget about it. Go home. Have a beer.
We'll get to that.
Oh, sorry.
We'll
all
get
right.
to that.
Okay.
The three of us are here being raucous as usual, and again, you're welcome to join us, and we hope you will. The theme today, as you may have heard from the music, is money. Money, money, money.
America, America,
it
the land of the money.
It is, of course, as Terry mentioned, the night of the New Hampshire primary.
It is?
And what better night to discuss money than the Republican primary?
The night of the millionaires.
Because it is the night of the millionaires.
The night of the millionaires, man.
And what's fascinating is a number of things and how it affects New Hampshire. One is how all these people got their money. There's been a lot of discussion of how Mitt Romney and Bain Capital.
The old-fashioned way.
Thievery.
Yeah, right.
Thievery.
That's the old-fashioned way. They're robber barons.
It also worked with Gingrich and Santorum and Perry. They all have their crony capitalism sides. We're going to discuss all of that. But also, not only how they made their money, but how they're using their money. We are in the post-Citizens United world, folks, where every foreign multinational corporation and their subsidiary can funnel billions of dollars in and do it so anonymously.
That includes General Electric, by the way.
That includes all of them.
Mark, that would be Corporate Citizens United. I think we should call it Corporate Citizens.
Because
the corporate citizens are all united.
According to Mitt Romney, corporations are people too.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Which is why I'd like to lock them all up. It's just I just can't get the corporation in the jail cell. They won't.
As that wonderful Dwag said, you know, as soon as Texas executes a corporation.
That's right.
You know, then I'll understand.
Then I'll believe that they're people.
Then I'll believe
that
they're the same.
Absolutely. As soon as I can strangle one in its crib.
You think that's part of Perry's campaign philosophy? Is he going to do that? Is he going to start executing corporations?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah,
be
if
nice.
So, I'd vote
Although
for
Although what's
him,
interesting
you know,
is that
go.
Perry, Santorum, and Gingrich are now talking about how Romney made his ill-gotten gains.
Bang.
So, man, the pot calling the kettle black.
And what we're really doing is setting up a whole bunch of things for November.
Yeah, they are.
One of the Mitt Romney's famous comments he made just last week was he really enjoys firing people.
And he's good at it, I might add.
He's
really,
at it.
He's a quality person firer.
Many,
I would say,
many,
if there's
many,
a word
people,
for somebody that does that.
I'll make you a $10,000 bet. He's fired many people.
I think you're right.
That's another thing, of course, that Romney has said. So I want to talk about a number of things tonight. One, how each of them made their
money. Doesn't everybody make $10,000 bets at a whim? I know. Terry does.
That's how I wound up poor.
You know that. I mean, right. When you have hundreds of millions of dollars, yeah. What's $10,000?
I'll bet you $10,000 that Perry's wrong.
And yeah. The other thing I want to talk about is this secret money, the super PAC money that, you know, Romney and, but mostly him. But there are the other candidates use it too. Perry actually has his own super PAC. So they say, well, we don't know what's going on. Mitt Romney very famously said in the debates last weekend, I've never seen any of the commercials. And when I saw the commercial,
right.
It had this, that, and that.
That's
in
right.
It. In 12 seconds, he reversed himself on that.
He didn't reverse himself. He just plain lied.
Okay, he lied. Right. Fine, I'll accept that. So I want to talk, before we get into the specifics, just about the general role of money in politics, because the three of us have come on here, and we have said that is the underlying corruption that corrupts everything else.
You're absolutely false.
Public financing of campaigns, it's the only way to keep people from buying our politicians. So before we get to the specifics of the Republican nominees in New Hampshire, how they made their money, and how they're spending their money, I want just ask you about the general role of money in American politics. Terry,
can I begin with Al Gore?
You favor that, don't you?
Let me begin with Al Gore.
Please do.
You've all seen this book, The Assault of Reason. That's written 2007.
They can't see it, Terry. They're listening on radio.
Well, hold it up. Maybe they can see it.
Hold it up.
Right,
we have these great people sitting out here dying to know what this book is.
They can see it.
Okay, anyway. The Assault of Reason, published by Al Gore.
The Assault on Reason.
In 2011. That's all right. Keep that. I don't need that. Anyway. First quote. This is from Walter Lippmann. Who knows how far back this goes? The manufacture of consent was supposed to have died out with the appearance of democracy, but it has not died out. It has, in fact, improved enormously in technique. Under the impact of propaganda, it is no longer plausible to believe in the original dogma of democracy.
So it's the manufactured democracy.
Walter
in other words, you
Lippmann.
Can buy and sell votes.
And an example of that, prior to that, Al Gore in his first campaign, after a long and detailed review of all the polling information and careful testing of personal TV commercials, the anticipated response from my opponent's campaign and the planned response to the response, my campaign advisors made a recommendation and prediction that surprised me with its specificity. If you run this ad, Al Gore, at this many points, which is a measure of the size of the advertising buy, and if Ash responds, as we anticipate, and then we purchase this many points to our response, to his response, the net result after 3 weeks will be an increase of 8.5% in your lead, Al Gore, in the polls.
That's pretty specific.
I authorized the plan and was astonished when 3 weeks later my lead had increased by exactly 8.5%.
And
This is an election in 1976.
He ran against Victor Ash in 1984. Yes. I know that
this
because
is 76
I worked
election.
In his campaign when I was
yeah,
a wee
but this
boy.
Is a 76 election.
I don't know
yep.
that he did seven.
Yeah, Victor Ash is quoting here. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, you ran against him in 84. Anyway, but that's exactly right. You can
Al Gore a liar.
You can,
right
but
there?
Maybe he ran against him twice. I don't know. But you can buy and sell votes. That,
yeah.
And that when they say that money is the mother's milk of politics, as someone who's worked in Congress, I can tell you that virtually everyone in Congress spends all day long when they're not actually on the floor, which actually isn't that often. It's going and whining and dying and getting donors and sucking up to them because they pay for them. And one of the few people who didn't do that was my boss, Barney Frank. But that's because he had a pretty safe district. Virtually everyone else was doing that on the hustings. So, Garland,
it's
not corrupting, is it?
No, but, no, I don't think it is. But the ironic thing about Citizens United, I think, is this, and that's the foundation of the Citizens United decision, and that is that the Supreme Court put forth an opinion as though it was a fact, and they based this on a fact. Citizens United is based on the fact that money, the Supreme Court found this fact, and they put it in writing. That money does not create corruption
in politics.
Money
does not corrupt.
Money
Basically,
does not cause corruption
found
in
that
politics.
If you bribe somebody millions of dollars, it has no impact on their behavior.
Right.
What the Supreme Court found, in fact, was that capitalism doesn't work. Because in capitalism, you pay someone and they do a job. But the Supreme Court found if we pay our politicians millions and millions of dollars, that doesn't affect their behavior one iota.
And they ignored.
I should note, by the way, it's not the full Supreme Court, just the five right-wing justices appointed by Republicans.
And they ignored all evidence put forward that demonstrated that money corrupts in politics. They ignored all of that, and they made a finding of fact. And they based the Citizens United founding on
that.
Now, this is a fact.
Well, listen, Garland.
That money doesn't corrupt the
three
politics.
Of those justices.
Ask Rod Blagojevich.
Three of those justices rejected the American people who voted for Al Gore in 2000 and installed George Bush. And the other two were appointed by the guy that the other three illegally installed. So you can understand why these people seem to like buying politicians. After all, you buy politicians, you install them in power,
you buy
and
judges.
They come back and they buy them.
You know, it is important to realize, I mean, there's sort of a turning point, no question about it, with Citizens United. But this is not new. I mean, this goes back decades in America. And it is the merging, the marriage of media and money. It's not just money's always been in politics, always will be in politics, always has manipulated politics to some degree. But the big change, which happened as soon as, you know, back in the 70s, in the 60s, is the manipulation of the public through media, which is a money event.
Now, wait a minute. The public has always been manipulated through media. I mean, the Spanish-American War began because they pretended that the Maine had been blown up, and it apparently was a boiler accident. They had yellow journalism in 1898, the Hearst newspapers.
Yeah,
so don't tell me that media manipulating people is new. What's new is that you can purchase this with your corporate
I'm sorry. That's, you know, if you're comparing a printed pieces of paper with a population that's 70% illiterate back then, compared to television today, you're not understanding you're not understanding the cultural power of television.
Well, there's something to support Terry's point a little bit.
Thank you.
To support his point a little bit, there is something else different going on here, and that is this. There's been a consolidation of the number of owners of the media outlets.
That's true.
And before there were independent media outlets. You know, the Washington Post here was owned by the Graham family. Various, even though they were owned by not a lot of families, they were owned by independent entities. Now, who owns the Huffington Post? The so-called progressive site. It's owned by Viacom.
Right.
Who owns MSNBC? Major
Comcast.
Yeah. Comcast and General Electric.
Who owns Fox, Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah. So when you look at the major media outlets, what's happened that's, I think, different now is that they are owned by the top 1%. By a corporation, you know, the top 1%, saying the top 1% and saying the mega corporations is really saying the same thing. So it's who they're owned by, so they can actually put forth the things that they believe in. They can put forth the things they need to put, the information they need to put forth to change our society
in an
insidious fashion.
You know, is going back to McLuhan. You know, the medium is the message. You have to understand that concept, which goes way back to the 60s and 70s when he wrote that book. The medium is the message. To persuade somebody through written word is kind of difficult. You can do it. There's no question about it. But it's harder because the person in a reading situation is actually engaging with their mind, their imagination as they're reading. A person watching an image is not. That is a relatively passive. They are receiving motion and emotion and are responding to it as dictated by what's on the screen. That is a huge psychological and cultural difference.
Fine, but it seems to me that if it were just TV ads that anyone could purchase, that anyone could put on the screen, that wouldn't be as much of a problem as what we have today, where shadowy corporations can pay millions of dollars. Frankly, what's the difference?
I think there's
Here's the difference. If citizens groups get together because they believe in a cause, whether it's pro-choice on abortion or pro-life for that matter.
What's the difference?
Citizens come together. Here's the difference, Terry. If American citizens are coming together because they believe in a cause, you know, and then they buy an ad because they support a cause, that's very different from one billionaire, okay, maybe the Koch brothers, for example, putting on 1,000 ads, doing so secretly, and doing so as if they were citizens for a cleaner earth while they're advocating massive pollution.
If you say that's a difference.
One person controlling all our media is millions of dollars.
If you say that's a difference, then how do you explain the Swift voting before Citizens United?
Yeah, but you know,
how do you explain
here's the thing about
the Swift
that.
Voting was a precursor.
Yeah, I was about to say, and
that's
Swift,
the point.
It's
and
just gotten worse.
And the Swift
yes,
voting,
it's worse.
And the Swift voting can be tracked back to
specific individuals
specific
who can be blamed
right,
for it. At
who
least
are,
it's not anonymous.
Yeah, and who are top 1%ers, who are mega corporate owners.
But we know their names.
Back, right. But now what we've got, you know, these super PACs, and what's scary about it is this. These super PACs that we have no idea. There's two things. Number one, you know, we hear the right wing argue about the unions and the union, the people in the union, their money is going for politics. Well, these corporations, people who own stocks, all these people out there who own a part of it, they don't even know that their money in this corporation
That's
is
right.
going for whoever. So there are
the
many people.
They're supposed to
right,
own it, but they don't
right.
control where
many
the money
people
goes.
Would divest from the various corporations
That's right.
if they knew that these corporations were contributing to candidate A or B. So it's unfair to the people who buy stocks, but number two, we as people have no idea that Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, I guarantee you a whole lot of money is coming from these defense contractors.
It is.
A ton of money is coming from these defense contractors.
It's going into a PAC called Citizens for Happiness and Puppies.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And
that,
what
right.
it really is the Koch brothers who want to pollute our waters, putting it into Citizens for Happiness and Puppies, and people don't
but
know.
But once you had the Republican parties,
is.
Once you had the PAC committees, you already had this process. Yes, it's worse now. But the big thing to realize is even if you got rid of Citizens United, you still have the same exact problem, which Walter Lippmann is referring to, which Al Gore is referring to back in 1976.
Yeah, he's
you
he's
have
not that
situation
old, Terry. He's not as old as you
where
are.
As long as you allow money into the system to be used to manipulate media, you control consent. How else do you explain the Iraq war?
Right, but so, it's but you know, well, I, here's where I would make the argument, Terry, where you said you would have the same exact problem.
I think it's
now,
worse.
You would have a similar problem, but for sure you would not. I mean, for sure you would not have the same exact problem. I don't think any argument can be made that before Citizens United and after Citizens United, you have the same exact problem because there were at least there were some limits on what they could
sure.
put in, and they had to be sneaker about it. Now it's boy, it's Katie bar the door.
And
look at the numbers. I mean, look what happened in, look what happened
Iowa.
In Wisconsin.
Oh, okay, Wisconsin.
With the whole, with the,
the recall movement.
The recall movement, all of that. Look at all the money that's come in there. $70 million, $80 million for a small, local
so
election that would have had $1 or $2 million.
If we reversed Citizens vs. United, the problem would be solved.
No, I said
and
no.
Democracy would
no,
be restored.
What we're saying
the issue is not solving the problem.
Worse now. Than we've ever been before. And what I
yeah,
find
but even if you're worse, you've still got to diagnose the basic problem. I don't care if my cancer is worse. If I've got cancer, it's going to kill me.
Terry,
that's what I've got to diagnose.
We all agree.
And we've got that cancer.
We all agree that we need public financing of campaigns, that that's the only way to get the
and you have
out
to get rid
of,
you have to get the media out of it, as they do in Australia, as a for instance. Six
I'm
weeks
not gonna
prior,
ban, I'm not going to ban
six
TV
weeks,
commercials.
6 weeks, oh, come on. 6 weeks prior to the election, Australia forbids advertising. 6 weeks. Prior to then, they can advertise like crazy. 6 weeks prior to the election, they can't. That's wisdom. That's the kind of things we have to do in this
yeah,
country.
Yeah, it's
before
wisdom.
Before we get to Nirvana, we're dealing
talking
with
about Australia, not Nirvana.
But we're dealing with this massive snake that has
right.
is strangling us and spreading its poison through us. And you're like, you know, I also wish the snake weren't so slimy.
Not
I
mean, only
we've,
right.
we've got
well,
billions nah. of dollars being funneled from unknown people, again, I bet it's mostly the Koch brothers, and what they can do is they can literally buy up all the media available so that there are no other voices, so that no
right.
one else gets a word edgewise, and
well,
they
why,
can do
if that's
so
true,
anonymously.
If you're really worried about that, why is Obama raising $1 billion to buy up as much media as he can?
He's got a fight on the playing
right.
field that's been drawn by the Republicans.
And
the
Terry,
problem.
And I think part of what you're saying is great, and I do think we should move in the direction of Australia. But let's not forget, you can't.
I hear the toilet water right. goes in the other direction down there. I haven't.
Yeah, the Coriolis effect.
I
it's the Coriolis
that.
Effect
yeah,
that goes the opposite way.
Well, we're
but
going down the drain.
Here's the thing about Terry.
Which way the water's
right.
going.
Yeah, but Terry,
like counterclockwise.
You can't mm-hmm. teach a person algebra who doesn't know simple addition and
exactly.
subtraction.
Exactly.
So while what you're saying is algebra politically in this country, it's algebra. But our citizens don't even know simple addition and subtraction when it comes to politics.
Well,
so to jump to that is it sounds good, but bring a student in and say, oh boy, what's X plus Y equal?
Now,
they'll
wait,
say,
now, wait a minute. Can you, can
that,
you
they'll say,
can
no,
you
that's English.
I want to move on.
Move on. We haven't settled this.
We're not going to settle it.
Oh,
I don't think we're settling
here's
it.
Here's what I find interesting.
But yeah, we have. You're wrong and
I
I'm right.
To,
settled.
I want to apply.
But you're wrong.
in the current context, all right? Because here we have, if you listen very closely to the fine whines of Newt Gingrich, okay? What's fascinating is here's a man, the speaker, former Speaker of the House, the guy that brought the conservative revolution, a guy who loves Citizens United, so he says, hates campaign finance law, so he says, thinks it's fine for billionaires and multinational corporations to anonymously dump hundreds of millions of dollars to control our election. And when it's done against him, oh, what a beautiful whine we hear. Apparently, Newt Gingrich thinks that it's just fine to do that against the Democrats.
Right.
But when Mitt Romney plays the money card on Newt Gingrich, he is hopping mad. And there's something beautiful about that hypocrisy that I wanted to bring into the debate. So who wants to deal with
it? I'll deal with it.
Gingrich is fine.
If there's one buddy who knows about hypocrisy, it's Garland.
Yeah, and you're right. Yeah, that's my middle name. But
his name is Nixon.
What I think is see on the far – well, excuse me, I was going to say the far – right. The truth is, you see it on the far extremes of both sides, and that is ethics of convenience.
Yes.
That's all it is. Ethics of convenience. When you're doing it and it hurts me, it's wrong. But
right.
If someone's doing it and it hurts you, it's right. Ethics of convenience means that there are no ethics there in the first place. And that's what we're saying.
You got to give Gingrich one point.
He was hopping mad. It was amazing. It was great to see.
You got to give Gingrich one point now because he's talking about Bain and Ron.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to get to that. I assure you I'm going to get to that. But just, it's interesting on the role of money in politics. And when he says to Mitt Romney, as he did in the last debate, cut the baloney, stop acting so pious. When Mitt Romney says, I have no idea about these ads. I've never seen those ads. And the ads that I have seen are just fine. And of course they're members of my campaign. And of course I know them personally. And of course they're my best friends. But I don't know what they're up to. And I don't control it. I just happen to really like the ads. Listen up, friends.
Going to be a good commander in chief.
He will have plausible deniability down to an art form.
Well, I don't know about plausible.
Okay.
Deniability.
Fine.
Implausible, maybe stretching it a little
fair
bit.
Fair enough. Implausible deniability.
Implausible deniability.
Down
great
to an art
campaign
form.
Slogan. I like that.
I like that. Implausible deniability. I've worked for a lot of politicians.
That Republicans, and Santorum's doing it too. Rick Perry's doing it too. Ron Paul, he's got his own pack. What they're doing is complaining about. Yes, so does Obama. But the difference is that President Obama wants to change the system. President Obama ultimately supports public financing. He's playing on the field that's been drawn
that's
for
it.
Now, wait a minute. Huntsman is the only one that supports, campaigns.
He doesn't support public financing.
He supports term limits. That's what it is. Term
right.
Limits.
His dad's a billionaire. Look, Huntsman's dad's a billionaire. Take my word for it. He don't support public financing.
Well, that's a great
segue
into my next point, which you've already jumped the gun on raising.
Me? I wouldn't jump
any
gun.
But that's pretty normal. Which is how all these guys got their money to begin with. Because, again, it's fascinating when you look at the Republican frontrunner, Mitt Romney. This is Mr. Corporate Raider. As he said,
Mr. Derivative.
As he said last week, he said, "I really enjoy firing people," and you get the feeling that he kind of does.
He's had people that service me. He enjoys firing people that service him, that provide services to him.
Well, he enjoys.
I wasn't going to go into the people who service him.
He enjoys firing the littles.
The littles.
Yeah. The littles.
The
he enjoys
people.
Firing.
Yes. The 99.9%.
The nobody.
Percent.
Yeah.
So here Mitt Romney was preparing to deal with this when he faced Obama, the famous photo of him and Bain with all the money coming out
money,
of
here. The guys got money in their mouth.
Throwing
out.
It all around and everything. Yeah. But now what's fascinating is that Romney and Perry and Santorum are all, and Ron Paul too, are all talking about Mitt Romney's crony capitalism. And I have a trivia question for you both gentlemen that I'll bet you know the answer to, but
all
I'm
right.
not sure. We'll find out. All right, so be ready to pounce on your buzzers. All right? Whoever hits your knee first gets the question.
Your knee or my knee?
Ready? Your own knee. All right? What percentage tax rate did Mitt Romney pay on the hundreds of millions he was paid?
15%.
That's correct. Garland wins. What? You're slow. What is this, Terry?
I'm just waiting for information.
Apparently you're slow.
I'm
the answer is correct. Mitt Romney paid 15% at the same time as the people working for him, like his secretary, would pay 25, 30, 35%.
And deservedly
Mitt Romney
so.
Making hundreds of millions of dollars and paying less than half the tax rate of everybody else.
You don't mean he's manipulating his taxes.
But he's a job creator.
No, it's legal. It's perfectly legal.
He's a job creator.
He's using that capital gains thing. Is that what he's doing?
That's what he's doing as a hedge fund manager.
Mark.
Yeah.
He's a job creator. Have
he's
you forgotten?
He's a job destroyer.
Right. No, he's creating jobs for people who work at the unemployment line. I mean, they need more people.
They're going to fire those government workers.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, you're right about that.
They're going to end unemployment insurance.
You're right. I forgot about all that socialism, unemployment insurance.
We had a great Dust Bowl in the 30s, right? I mean, we have a wonderful tradition, Grapes of Wrath.
We got trains for the hobos to jump on and, go back and forth across the country.
We need more
Hoovervilles. They lock the boxcar doors now.
The doors are locked. You just got to kind of hang on.
We got all that soulful music. I mean, we can bring back the Great Depression.
We're trying to. This is the American dream. Bring back the Great Depression. It was great then. It'll be great now. Right?
But, of course, Mitt Romney, who earned all his ill-gotten gains by basically firing American workers, shipping jobs over to China and so forth, in some ways he can't compare to the people running against him, people like Newt Gingrich. And Rick Santorum.
Well, Newt Gingrich got his fair and square. Yeah. He went to Washington, D.C.
Santorum and Gingrich did the same thing. It's funny.
Well, not to mention Bill Clinton, who's now getting, $200,000 for each speaking engagement. It's a nice career step.
I'm okay with speaking. I don't really know how anything about it.
Oh, sure. And who's he speaking to?
I don't care.
Let me tell you something.
I'll be happy to get paid $200,000 to speak at your event.
Let me give you a little fact, because I used to be...
In fact, I'll give Terry $200,000 to stop speaking.
I'm not going
to
do that.
No, don't.
I used to work in this wonderful business of big events.
$200,000 what? Yen?
Yeah. And big corporations and big shows and big extravaganzas, right? And I used to book people like Clinton and like Tony Bennett and whomever. That's what I did for a living, right? I'm out in San Diego. I'm about to show. Going in to spec the room before I set the show up and everything else, you know. There's a convention going on in there. This is true. It's the convention.
Unlike the other things you say?
The convention happens to be by the American Bankers Association.
Yeah.
You know, they're in there yammering away. So I'm walking in and I'm just looking around where I'm going to put television, where I'm going to put lights, worrying about the tech. But I'm listening to the speaker. And the speaker is quoting, and I forget who it was that originally said it, but the speaker is quoting to the American Bankers Association, once we find out that we can use our system to vote ourselves money, democracy is over. That's literally what he's saying on the podium. Now, I thought when I first heard it, it was a warning. It wasn't warning.
He didn't get
cheers? It was a tactic. They just
no, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, if
they're
I'm not mistaken, I think that speaker was, in fact, Mitt Romney.
It could have been.
We're going to have to take a break real soon. But one thoughtful moment going out to break.
All right.
My former boss, Barney Frank, said an amazing thing to me, because we're going to get into lobbyists and Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich. He told all of us on his staff, and I don't think he'll mind me sharing this story, because he was on financial services. We had bankers come in and lobbyists all the time. He said, if you've got a well-heeled corporate lobbyist that wants to talk to you, my staffer, and you've got some poor illegal immigrant who's about to be deported, who's got AIDS or something, and who do you help? He said, of course you help the poor immigrant. And the reason is this. There's 434 other members of the House who'll be happy to help the banker. But you're the only one that's going to help that poor immigrant.
And why is Barney leaving us? Don't leave, Barney.
And he told us, put the banker on your back step. If you've got time, you can see them. But you need to help the people that only I'm willing to help. And I got to tell you, that's one of the things that I'll always remember from my time working
for him. Yeah, that's great. I love Barney Frank. I hate to see him go.
Don't leave.
There are, of course, but Gingrich and Santorum felt very differently about lobbying. And when we come back after break, I want to focus on how they made their ill-gotten gains. Both of them were relatively modest means until they started playing
the lobby system.
Santorum and Gingrich. So we are at Ben's. Let's give a big cheer for the people at Ben's. And we will be right back, I believe, right after this.
Hi, I'm Dori Latner, native of Hattiesburg, Mississippi, who is currently residing in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. I've been here about 37 years, moved here from Atlanta, Georgia, to attend Howard University, where I received my master's in social work degree, and have enjoyed living here. The thing that has kept me grounded here for the most part has been WPFW. You may laugh when you hear me say that, but I'm a person who is curious and want to know so much about what's going on, not only in my community, but across the globe. WPFW provides that information for me. I love music, all kinds of music, from reggae to salsa to the blues to gospel to jazz, and it keeps me entertained.
For more information about how to become a member of WPFW, please go to WPFW.org and click on the Support Us tab. The future is now.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. We are live at Ben's Next Door. I am Mark Levine with
Garland Nixon.
And
Terry D. Kester, and happy to be here with you, Mark and Garland.
And we are it's the Raucous privilege. Caucus. Let's give a cheer, everyone, at Ben's.
Yeah.
It's not too late to join us. All you have to do is get in your car, drive down to 1211 U Street, right next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, and you can watch a live radio show in progress. You can watch Garland, Terry, and I almost strangle each other.
As we
struggle to get airtime against, well, each other, which is what we do every week, every Tuesday.
No, nothing but cooperation.
7 to 8 p.m., 89.3 FM, WPFW. We are at Ben's today. Next week we'll be in studio, so we'll take your calls then. But today you can just come see us live. And folks, if you want to make a comment or ask a question, there's an open microphone.
That's right.
Anyone is welcome to say what they want. Anything dealing with money and politics, and I'd say that's a pretty wide-ranging topic.
And the bribery and stupefaction of the public by the media.
Unless you're an African-American, because then Newt Gingrich will only talk to you about food stamps. Because he wants to go to the NAACP to talk about food stamps.
Or as Rick Santorum said, now how did he put it?
He said
blacks shouldn't ask for other people's money.
No, he said that he was going to make sure.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he said he wanted to make sure that he didn't give black people other people's money. So they'd be happy.
Right.
Now, don't get me wrong. What that means is he doesn't mind giving white people other people's money so they'll be happy. Particularly black people.
Right. Give it
he don't want them to get anybody's money so they'll be happy.
Right. Give it
just makes you want to be an American, doesn't it?
Given that the majority of people on welfare are white people, he seems to have no problem with welfare.
No. Black people's money can go to them to make them happy, but as far as black people, the other way around, they get...
Right. So... what I want to focus on, it's interesting, is that Newt Gingrich, he's this reformer, right? He's this conservative. And then Mitt Romney points out all the ill-gotten gains from Fannie Mae, Fannie Mac, for all the lobbying he's done. A lot of people haven't focused on Rick Santorum's lobbying. Rick Santorum is the author of the notorious K Street Project.
That's right. Oh, yes.
Isn't just someone who made a lot of money from lobbyists for natural gas. He also, by the way, made a lot of money from a really disgusting thing called Universal Health Services, which would torture and abuse teenage kids, including doing things like an exorcism. And he's on the board while they're doing this kind of stuff. And so,
did exercise people?
I
can believe Rick
that can be very painful.
Anyway, any tactic they can use to get a vote, they'll use it.
And get a buck.
But Rick Santorum and others came up with the great idea of the K Street Project. What was the K Street Project? They were going to use the revolving door between government and lobbyists in order to benefit the Republican Party. So what they do is they would get people and they would say, hey, corporation, you give us $1 million, we'll vote on aid for you for $1 billion. And if we do that, then you'll hire our people and you'll pay them millions of dollars. And that revolving door, in fact, that practice is now illegal because the Democratic Congress in 07 made that practice illegal. But this is a guy who thought it was perfectly fine to have the revolving door of bribery. And what's fascinating is people don't even know this because Rick Santorum was kind of new to making it in the top half. So you've got Gingrich and Santorum, who made their money through Washington corruption. You have Rick Perry, who made his money through the crony capitalism down in Texas. He just does state corruption.
Yeah, right. Local corruption is much better than the corruption in a broad sense.
You know, I think oil and gas interests in Texas are pretty big. I don't think it's a small business. You've got Mitt Romney. Mr. I only pay 15% taxes and I fire as many Americans as I can because I like to fire people. About the only one who's not corrupt is Ron Paul, but he's just crazy.
Yeah. So you know what I love? You know what I love about Rick Santorum? This is what I love about Rick Santorum.
You love something about Rick Santorum?
Well, he wears
if you love Rick Santorum, he's going to make sure you're
punished.
There's
lots of things I love about him. Then number one, the sweater vest.
That's man on man stuff.
Look, this guy wears a sweater vest. Okay, number one.
Yes.
Number, which is a pretty good thing. I got some sweater vests. But number two, I kind of Argyle.
That in
I got a
public?
Black Argyle sweater.
Are
but
you
anyway,
sure you want to admit that?
Yeah,
in
that's
public?
Right, man. Me and Rick Santorum. But you probably
you are such a
you,
fashion.
You
player.
Would probably confuse the two of us if we were standing side by side.
We do. Sure.
But
we
at
do,
any rate.
Nixon Santorum. Yeah. All I know is Nixon's got a little bit
Nixon,
more integrity
Santorum,
than Santorum,
yeah,
but not
right
much.
That. But here's
not
the
much.
Thing about Rick Santorum that's interesting. I'm watching him on Morning Joe. God forbid, I hate to admit that I watch that, but I'm watching. I'm you know kind of like shoving needles into my eyeballs. I'm watching Morning Joe, and Rick Santorum is on there, and he's saying, "You see, I have a message that's a blue collar message." And therefore, blue-collar people are going to vote for me. That's what kills me about this whole thing. If I change my message now, don't get me wrong, my policies are going to give every dime to the top 1%. But I have changed my message. And I now have a blue-collar message, and that means that blue-collar people are so stupid that they're going to vote for
me. You know what's funny about that? Rick Santorum in the debate said when someone asked him about the working class, asked him about the middle class, he said, we don't have classes in America. Now, I appeal to blue-collar workers.
Well, they want to do away with public education.
So, apparently,
so, I mean,
you
technically,
can say
he was
blue-collar,
right.
But you can't say working class. So I got to learn the lingo.
That sounds like
you
labor.
Know, I don't want to beat my point to the end, and I won't. But I want to
give
you...
Oh, sure.
No, Terry, that's so out of character for you, not beating your point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I mean, you know, the policies and the hypocrisy and all that's cute and interesting. But
no, that's just this show. We want to. That's just the show, Terry. We want to talk about politics.
I just heard, you know, Rick Santorum.
Thank you. You called me cute and interesting?
No.
I appreciate that.
I did not.
I
was calling Garland cute and interesting.
Oh, all right. Garland wears sweater vests.
No, he's talking about both of us. I'm cute, you're interesting.
How can you be cute and interesting in a sweater vest?
Anyway, Rick Santorum's latest commercial is, you know, all about his kids. And he's got his kids on a little swing and everything. And it's got... His kids and his talking, and they're literally saying.
So he's pro-child.
And they're saying that
really?
Rick Santorum is a great husband, and he's hugging his wife, and is a great father, and he's with his kids, and he homeschools. That's what will determine his success or failure. Not policy. Not
you know,
money. That's what will determine it.
I have to hope that the American public, over all this time, has become a little more cynical.
How do you think we sold Marlboro cigarettes and lousy Chevrolets? It's got nothing to do with thought.
I'll tell you something that I think
501 jeans. Give me a break. I need a fly here. I need buttons here. Are you kidding me?
I gotta go
advertising, marketing.
I have to praise the young people. I think the millennials in this millennium, there's a certain cynicism. You know, you can see it on Jon Stewart, right? The public is finally becoming a little bit cynical of all these politicians. Now, to be fair, they don't.
Yeah,
trust
that's
Obama.
Not helping the
they
situation
don't trust
Obama
actually.
Either.
Well, not
but
to mention least, the fact that they're disenfranchised voters now,
yeah,
so they
right.
won't be able to vote anyway. The young people are great, but you know
well,
they can't
yeah,
vote.
Well, of course, Republicans won't let them vote because they vote. For
but
liberals,
if they could vote, they wouldn't be fooled.
But what's fascinating is when Newt Gingrich talks about the sanctity of marriage, and I don't know whether it's his first marriage, his second marriage, or his third marriage.
Yeah, right.
He's
so
working on it. Give him credit. He's working on it.
But apparently God decided that he should marry and that he should marry a second time and that he should marry a third
so
time.
So Newt Gingrich is a Mormon, right?
Well, he's a Catholic. No, no.
No, wait a minute. He's the guy with three wives. Are you confusing me
here? Catholic. He's Catholic, isn't he now?
He is, but Garland has a point.
No, he's the guy with three wives. I thought he was
polygamy going on there.
Well, if it works, you know. I mean, what the heck?
Oh, yeah, so he does it one at a time.
He's just serial.
So he's on number
right,
three.
Right.
Which don't get me wrong.
It's sanctified.
Right. Which don't get me wrong. It's his life, and no one really cares.
I don't
it's
care
just
if
the
he
idea
so,
that he runs
so
around with this.
So sanctimonious about
oh, gosh.
It.
Gosh.
And saying,
it's
oh,
sickening.
I'm sorry. Gay couples can't get married. Only I can get married as many times as I want. The gay couples can't get married even once. That's the problem. See, but we're getting off topic.
Yes, we are.
Back to money.
Thank heavens.
Back
somebody
to money.
Noticed.
Back to money. So... My question is this. Terry, you mentioned that there's $1 billion that President Obama's raising.
Yep, minimum.
It sounds like you're condemning that.
Yes.
But I got to tell you, one progressive politician who I have tremendous respect for.
I was about to say his name.
Senator Feingold of Wisconsin, a state that, let's face it, was a very liberal state.
Yep.
Till they threw out Senator Feingold. They put in Scott Walker. Now, I think we're going to get Wisconsin back. I think the recall elections are going to work. But Senator Feingold, to his credit, you'd praise him, Terry, not take PAC funds, did not take corporate funds. And this fine, fine progressive senator is no longer in our Senate because he didn't play by the rules currently existing. In my view, we got to change these rules. We need public financing. But I don't blame President Obama for playing by the current rules as he works to change them.
You know,
I don't blame him.
You know, a thing I learned a long, long time ago by basically getting in trouble, you know.
You're always in trouble.
Yeah, I usually am. Now I cause it rather than get in it. both. You know, but if you get yourself involved in a situation that has certain rules to the game and everything else, I don't care what it is, if it's a gang, if it's a sorority, if, you know, if it's a corporation, if it's politics. If you get yourself involved in that and start going along with that particular game, don't pretend you're there to change the game, because it doesn't work that way.
It does.
And
Gorbachev got in as part of the system, and then through Glasnost helped change it. Sometimes you have to work within the system to change the system. And, do you really want nobody in the Democratic Party running?
I've heard enough of you.
I want him to run honestly for once.
Feingold ran an honest campaign. He didn't take the money.
Yeah, and Obama did.
Lost.
No. Did Obama support Feingold? No,
of course he
didn't.
He did.
Oh,
look, I've heard about enough of you guys. I want an intellectual conversation here. Let's go to the mic. Let's go to our audience. Some people that actually know what's going on.
Well, they've had supper. We have.
Bill.
Welcome,
okay.
Bill.
Greetings. Terry, to your point, a great American politician, one William Jefferson Slick Willie Clinton, said, I believe in campaign finance reform. I do not believe in unilateral disarmament.
That really helped.
I agree.
As for, again, people coming up through systems, and there's a more flamboyant example than Mikhail Gorbachev.
His name escapes you right now.
No. De Klerk.
De Klerk?
South Africa.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Ah, okay. Mm.
Right.
I mean, who could have made the world a much worse place.
Absolutely.
Had he so, and he had people who were willing to help him do so. Now,
Sadat. But that's after.
Anwar Sadat.
No. He started during apartheid.
I know, but he's still after the movement is full blown.
But he was still inside the system. He was, in fact, inside the system.
The pressure was created. That's the point.
Lyndon Johnson was
What he did would have been the equivalent of Ross Barnett or George Wallace endorsing the 65 Voting Rights Act. Make no mistake.
Bill, you started out with Clinton. You know, what's Clinton do the first time he gets in office? He makes sure the Glass-Steagall is thrown out. I mean,
he contributes to the problem as soon as he's in office.
The
Republicans took Congress in the late 90s.
Fine. He contributes to the problem. He could have prevented it. Does he know?
Terry only wants perfect politicians.
I want the people to stand up and revolt. That's what I want them
Bill
to do.
Finish.
All right,
okay,
Bill.
I have a pure question. Okay. In terms of, okay, we know money plays a role in politics because
people
advertisement and propaganda play a role in politics.
Sure.
And I have something I'm going to talk to you gentlemen after this show is over about. But I'd like to know, all right, how much does in your knowledge of the way of who is who in this whole operation, would left/progressive issue ads have as much access as the right does? And I say that because I don't remember which progressive cause was not allowed on the Super Bowl when the now monstrously famous Tim Tebow and his mother were allowed. And I remember it drove me up the wall at the time, because it always seems that the right can get their message out and the progressive side has a great difficulty. And I'd like to hear you gentlemen go on about
that for a while.
Was that the Super Bowl on Fox? I think I can answer your question.
Actually, it was on CBS when that happened.
It was on CBS. Look, two things. One, progressive liberal issue ads work. They do. They influence people just as the right does. We can play to their emotions. Actually, it's easier to get people to care for people than to care for corporations, crazy enough.
Don't forget that.
Well, only in Mitt Romney's
world. Okay, my mistake,
Can we get ours on? It's a more difficult question. As you know, in the world of talk radio, the vast majority of talk radio is right wing. The vast majority. They can't hear you on the microphone, but Bill points out that that's true even in this market. Washington, D.C. has voted more than 90% for the Democrat for every presidential election going back really since DC could start to vote in 1964. So, but
that's primarily market, when Washington DC was African American.
No, but it's also true in Northern Virginia. It's also true in Montgomery County. It's true in Prince George's County. In the entire Washington metropolitan area is a very blue area. It's a very Democratic area. And yet we have more conservative radio. It's true in San Francisco. It's true because big corporations own the vast majority of our airwaves. And let's face it, big corporations don't want to hear an anti-corporate message. But I want to get your opinions on that.
Mike
Hirsch, Progressive Democrats. Hello.
Well, I want to thank you guys for talking about money and politics. I think that money and politics don't mix well for the people, and it's great that you're discussing this. We're coming up on a really terrible anniversary, which is the anniversary of Citizens United, and a bunch of us are going to be together, and I'd like to invite the three of you to come and speak.
Mark has the information,
if you please.
I was going to announce it. What it is this is Occupy the Courts. So it's a combination of progressives, Democrats, and the Occupy movement. On January 20th, 2012, in front of the United States Supreme Court in Washington, D.C., we're going to occupy the courts to say no to Citizens United. It is Friday, January 20th at noon. You can remember January 20th at noon because that happens to be the inauguration date and time.
January 20th.
It's at noon.
Yeah.
So that's so a year after that, we'll either get President Obama reelected or I hate
President Santorum.
I hate to think about the other option. But I could tell you that I'll be happy to be there. I will be happy to speak there. Garland, you going
to
be there?
I should be there. I have to check my schedule. I don't know yet. I never know anything until I learn my schedule.
I'll be there. Apparently, Tom Hartman's going to be there. Annabelle Parks.
I plan on being there.
We will have a big movement. Although
we'll share the microphone there, right?
I have to tell you, fascinatingly enough, the United States Supreme Court, the people, the bastion of the Constitution, the bastion of the First Amendment, has apparently said that you can't protest in front of them. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
So
we're going to jail on the 20th,
well,
right?
We may. So I hope you all will come and bail us out
when
the Raucous Caucus is incarcerated for protesting in front of the Supreme Court. One of the things we can do, though, is I bet we could protest on the sidewalk in front. And so, because I don't, you know, I don't really want to be arrested if I can help it. But
you haven't lived till you've been arrested.
Well, you enjoy it more than I do.
I was going to say, well, I haven't lived in.
No, I don't.
And
enjoy
I'm not
it.
Looking to live anytime soon if I can help it.
Yeah. But let's face it, the United States Supreme Court is one of the most undemocratic, anti-American, unconstitutional institutions as of the current day, the five members, as it's ever been, really since the time of...
I think that's out of line. I really do. Here I am, the skeptic on the show, and I think that's out of line.
Five justices overturned a Democratic election to install their president and then ruled that multinational foreign corporations could throw billions of dollars in to control our elections. To me, that goes right up there with Dred Scott and Lochner.
The interesting thing about Citizens United was they made that ruling when that wasn't even the issue at hand.
No, of course not.
That wasn't even the case. They just kind of looked and said, well, no, this is a nice little opportunity to do something here, isn't it?
You're going to defend the Supreme Court?
Let me put it this way.
Terry's defending the Supreme Court.
I don't
want to
get too philosophical about this, you guys, you know, but I mean, one of the things that happens, unfortunately, and we contribute to it, I contribute to it, you contribute to it, is undermining any kind of faith and belief in democracy whatsoever. If we start undermining the Supreme Court, then things are if we can make Supreme Court a really political issue, and I'm not agreeing with the decisions, but we know there's scores of other decisions besides these. These are just two or three out of hundreds of decisions.
Throw the word horrific.
I know. But the other ones have not been they haven't been as divided. They've been much more even. They're not all 5-4 decisions. That's simply not true. The overwhelming majority of decisions are not 5-4 decisions. That's a simple fact. So, you know, you can criticize these decisions, and I do, but I'm not sure you want to start tearing apart the Supreme Court as well.
I'll be happy to tear it apart.
If you tear that apart, what have you got left?
I'll be happy to only tear apart five judges.
Yeah.
Four and three quarters.
I'll go for that.
I mean, I'm not going to tear down, you know, Ginsburg and Breyer, and they're probably the only institution
that is at least somewhat, a teeny little bit separated from the money. Although, I must point out to you, if you didn't know, when I first arrived here and started doing these big shows again, guess what? You can rent the Supreme Court chambers to do a show.
Well,
I did that regularly. Isn't that nice?
Not only that.
You can rent them and do a show right in the chambers.
Well,
it's fun.
They're
you
not
can't
exactly,
go behind the bench, but you can do a show.
They're not exactly separated. And they're
we
not
had Dennis...
They're not exactly Denise separated Graves from money. One of our judges has a wife that makes a whole lot of money working for the Tea Party.
Yes, Justice Thomas's wife.
Thomas's wife makes a whole lot of money working for the Tea Party. So they're that separated.
We can book, maybe we can book the Raucous Caucus in there. A little song and dance, you know, a little music.
You know, they have canes a jail cell in the Supreme Court, Terry, and I'm sure it's waiting for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, Terry, let me say this. I don't care if they make – look, if they make 912 really wonderful, fair, reasonable decisions – and they make one really bad one? I mean, Citizens United, they could make all great decisions for 100 years. That one Citizens United decision is bad enough to screw up all the rest, in my opinion.
I still haven't gotten over Bush v. Gore. Five individuals overruled hundreds of millions of Americans who loudly voted for Al Gore, not just the majority nationwide, but the majority in Florida. Scalia said in a day that will live in infamy, December 9th, 2000, that was the date that we'll live in infamy. He said that if we count the votes before deciding who is president, it will damage the legitimacy of George Bush's claim to be president. That to me is right out of Stalinism. And I will never, ever forgive the United States Supreme Court for trampling on hundreds of millions of American people and throwing out democracy. And that was before Citizens United. So I'm
You don't have to forgive them. You don't have to forgive them.
It's one thing for reasonable minds to differ.
But if you politicize the courts to this degree...
They're already politicized.
Yes, and there is a corrective process for that, which we've been using for decades.
Have you noticed I'm the radical here?
Because
we're switching sides.
That's right, because the only solution out of your problem at this point is to throw money at the Supreme Court.
The solution is to elect Democratic presidents who will appoint and nominate justices about the Constitution rather than throw it out.
The solution is not to support third-party candidates Nader and Cynthia McKinney, who will cause the Republicans to win and nominate these clowns.
Here he comes.
If for no other reason, if you can't find one other reason to say Democrats should be in, the one reason is the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. Because they don't live forever.
That's right.
And one day, Scalia will depart from this earth.
No, he won't. He's immortal.
No, he's not a demon.
You haven't seen
immortal.
The cape.
You have to stake his heart and cut his head off.
At that moment, I pray to God we have a Democratic president.
Not to mention the current threat, Rocky Anderson. And also, please talk about, since you brought it up, you guys know who Rocky Anderson is. And you know he's planning on running for president as a third-party progressive. He is the former mayor of Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay.
I thought he was a linebacker for the Seahawks. My bad. Shows how much I know.
Might be. But this
– He was in all those movies drinking raw eggs, right?
The Rocky Anderson I am talking
about. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He's the former mayor of Salt Lake City, Utah, and he is planning to run as a progressive third-party candidate.
Oh,
also,
great.
Also, America Elect, is also a threat because it will delude some people into thinking that they are actually participating in the process, and it will drain energy from the actual election, which I haven't discovered the right-wing link, but I swear I will be paranoid.
I assure you the Koch brothers.
That doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry, because here we are talking about money controls politics. Money controls the Republican Party. Corporations control the Republican Party and the Democratic Party.
To a lesser extent.
Somebody starts a whole different approach, and you're saying they're wrong?
Absolutely,
I don't understand that.
They're wrong.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking about Citizens United.
The way our system works.
Works?
The way our system goes.
There's
operates.
The problem.
The way
operates.
Our system operates.
Operates.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that if
choose
you
these
vote
words.
For a third party that is progressive, you are helping Republicans take power.
Precisely.
You don't even have to take Florida. In New Hampshire, 22,000
people. You know, you're going under the illusion.
Terry, I want to hear these numbers. I want to hear the numbers.
22,000 people voted for Ralph Nader in New Hampshire.
If
only a third of them had held their nose and voted for Al Gore, Al Gore would not
have
been president for 8 years.
You're perpetuating.
We wouldn't have been in Iraq. We wouldn't have had the massive poverty we have.
You're perpetuating.
The depression we have. All because some people were too holy to vote for Al Gore.
You're frankly at this point misleading the American public. And let me point out how.
Absolutely
yes, you
correct.
Are. Because what you're trying to say which is one of the greatest illusions of all, is that if we just elect this president or that president, the problems are solved.
No,
that
no,
is
Terry.
Bull.
No, Terry. Terry, that's a straw man. That's a straw man argument.
No, that's a straw man what you're saying.
No,
you're
that
trying,
is a straw man argument.
You're trying to
you're
say.
You're trying to say there's no difference between Al Gore and George Bush.
And Terry.
You're trying to say that this country wouldn't have gone to war in Iraq.
We wouldn't have.
Yeah.
If Al Gore were president.
Oh, and you really think with that president. Congress? You really think with that Congress?
Congress
no, wait, wait, wait.
Took us to war in Iraq. Come George on. Bush and Dick Cheney took us to
and
war.
And Terry,
in Iraq.
You're,
no,
creating a straw, you're creating no, a straw man
no.
argument.
Look, I'll tell you the reason we went to war in Iraq, and this is the real reason. And if you don't believe me, go ahead and read Greg
but
Palast.
That's not the issue.
It is the issue.
The issue is Al Gore wouldn't have
read
did it.
Read Greg Palast. Okay, the reason we went into war in Iraq is to make sure that we didn't have any oil coming out of Iraq. That's the point.
That's
it's
irrelevant.
A, it is
Al
not
Gore the
it is not this because Jeez. What they did, the oil companies and all the corporations that influenced all of Congress.
No.
And the congressional drive would have taken us there in any case.
That's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. Because our point was Al Gore would not have taken us into Iraq. Number two.
And if the Republicans had started playing the card, which they would have, that there's weapons of mass destruction, if anybody had played that card, we still would
have. Number two.
That's not the point. You manipulated the public. The corporations manipulated the politicians.
Number two, Terry.
And the president can't stop it.
You said we indicated that if only Al Gore were president, that, quote, the problems would be solved. That's a straw man argument. We never indicated that the problems would be solved because I know personally, I don't believe that there is a person or an entity that will solve all problems. And in fact, I think that's called the myth of perfection.
Right. Yeah, then why put all this focus?
Let me finish with this. That's a fallacy. Wait a minute. That's a fallacy that says you either get a perfect system, a perfect bill, or a perfect whatever, or you get nothing. And it's built on the myth that there could be a perfect
then
system.
Then why put
or a
all this
president?
Focus on why? The presidency?
Why? Because
why?
Al Gore would not have appointed Alito.
No, currently.
Al Gore
just
would
forget
not
that.
Have appointed
Go currently.
Roberts, and there would be no Citizens United case.
Right.
If only a few progressives hadn't been so holier than thou and voted for Ralph Nader, if they had voted for Al Gore instead, we wouldn't have the absolute corruption and disgusting financial system we have today. Yes, we would still have problems, but we are
sure.
in the depths.
Just different problems.
We are in the depths. So let me say that if anyone's going to encourage a third party candidate, I say Ron Paul, run.
Yes, sir.
We want to see
Ron Paul, run.
We want to see Gingrich. You can run too.
Yeah.
Santorum, Michelle Bachmann, all of you. I want to see run third party campaigns.
Buddy Rumor, whatever his name is, he's
There's
a Republican.
Nothing
run.
This progressive would like to see more, but what I don't
and
want to
in
see
that case
is
you
a
will
progressive
see,
third
you will
party
see,
candidate.
And in that case, you will see no change.
No change. That's
no
like
change.
Saying there's no difference between Obama and Bush or between Bush and Clinton or between Clinton and Reagan.
We're talking about the system. We're talking about money and politics.
No, you're
That's
so,
what we're talking
well,
about.
Well, and the other thing is this.
If you want that change, you're going to have exterior forces make a change. It will not change from within.
It will not be complete change, but there will be some change. Some change, even if it's infinitesimal change, even if it's a little teeny weeny bit of change. Let me tell you this, Terry.
How has it been, if, how has it if, been changed if, in the last few years?
If there is a little change, for instance, I'm just thinking, don't ask, don't tell. That's a little change. Guess what?
No, no, we're talking about one topic.
No,
we're talking about money and
Here's
politics.
What I'm saying. No, I'm saying I'll take a little, if all I can get is a little teeny bit of change, I'll take it.
But let me answer Terry's question. How about money and politics?
Yeah, how do we change
that? The worst decision on money and politics is the Citizens United case. Had a few progressives voted for Al Gore rather than Ralph Nader, we wouldn't have the Citizens United case.
Because he wouldn't
Al
have put
Gore
right.
would not
That's
have appointed
simplistic.
John
that
Roberts
simplistic.
And Alito.
John
Alito.
Roberts and Alito. He would have appointed people
you're
like
assuming,
Kagan and Sotomayor.
You're assuming he could have gotten his appointees, you know, voted through the Senate
All
in the
I'm
first place.
All I'm saying is I agree with Garland here.
You've got an oligarchy.
The enemy of the good.
You've got an oligarchy driving the situation, and their power is so extreme and so big. They control the decisions. It's not Bush. It's not Obama. It's not even Congress. It is the oligarchy, and that has to be your focus.
Well, I think we need to take the focus back. We are about to run out of time.
We got to go.
We didn't solve all the issues.
I'm just trying to make the country a little bit better. I'm not trying to solve all the issues.
It's been nice, guys. Next Tuesday at 7 p.m.
We will be in studio. You can call us then. 89.3 FM every Tuesday. We are signing off.